Welcome to the Locksmith Security Network. LSN is your powerful resource hosted by Wayne Winton for all things locksmith and security. All righty, we are here live with JK Walker. Well, we're recording this, we'll post it at a later point in time. The live is a little bit difficult to do, but this is the Locksmith Security Network podcast, and this is episode number one. So I have a very special guest today. Mr. JK Walker is going to join us and talk about some fun stuff. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, for you of those out there who may not know who I am, my name is JK Walker. I started out in this industry as a mobile diagnostic guy, and then slowly transformed into locksmithing. Later in my career, I got into software development and creating programs like ECU Hero, you know, which is a program that we developed that allows you to do flashing and cloning on Chrysler modules and things like that. So a lot of the times where we get challenged with these solutions in the aftermarket that the OEMs don't want us to use modules, we develop techniques to make that easy for technicians and locksmiths out there in the field so they can recycle these modules and, you know, we can have some kind of sustainability.
Oh, great. Cool. Awesome. Thank you. And do you have your own locksmith company as well, or?
Yeah. So, you may ever see JK, not a locksmith, we say, right? So I have my company's called Mobile Automotive Diagnostics. So like I said, I started out, I was doing, programming, right? I was kind of the guy that I would go and offer those dealership services to vehicles in my area. And then around the time of, you know, when COVID came around, it just got to a necessity where I needed those things and I needed them now. So is what we done is, I started to learn this and I started to just deep dive into it. And, I've got great locksmiths in the area, you know, those guys that I worked with for years and years. And, you know, it just became a necessity where I was starting to depend on a locksmith so much that I moved into locksmithing. And now I do a lot of locksmithing and, it's a really good field. It's really competitive. And I just love the newness of it, right? I love there's so much to learn and there's so much to take in. And it's always a challenge. And I think that's one of the greatest things about locksmithing is it requires a bunch of different skill sets.
Right. Yeah, it absolutely does. It certainly does. So that's great. I appreciate all that background. We're going to just go ahead and dive in. And this is going to be a different kind of podcast. We're really going to not be afraid to dive in and talk about the subjects that are highly controversial. And I want everybody listening to just take it for what it is. And if you're not mature enough to listen to what two people have to say without, you know, just forming your own opinions and just, you know, wanting to cuss everybody out, then this isn't really the podcast for you. This is an open platform to where we can discuss different ideas and everybody has different ideas, but we're not all going to be agreeing on everything. It's not all going to be the same. And when we talk about industry regulation and scammers and licensing and, you know, all of that different stuff, it's going to get some tempers flared and it's going to, you know, affect some people differently. So I just ask that people really give it a chance and also learn how to understand things from both points of view. There's always there's two slices to it. There's two sides, no matter how thin you slice it. There's always going to be two sides to that story. And so let's just go ahead and talk about some of the industry regulation. What are your opinions on that? Where do you come from on that? And some of the background as to why.
Well, depends on which side of the regulation you're looking at. I mean, we have different regulation. We have regulation at the state level. We have regulation, you know, through some of these trade associations and things like that. So I guess if we started maybe at a state level and we kind of take a look at what's going on, I'm in Tennessee. We're not a licensed locksmith state. We used to have licensing, as a lot of states used to have licensing. But is what we're starting to see in a lot of these states is they're actually starting to pull those licensing requirements. I mean, there was at one time in the state of Tennessee that you couldn't cut hair if you, you know, you had a criminal background. And, you know, is what they've started to do, it looks like these legislators, is they've went in and they've said, hey, are we creating barriers of entry to get into the market? Because that's one of the things we've really got to look when we look at regulation is not only how it affects us currently right now, but how does it affect the next 10 years? How does it affect the next 20 years, the 30 years? Could we take regulation and somehow make ourselves the last of the Mohicans? And then, you know, we're left with nobody to inherit our profession.
Right. Yeah. You know, it does get very, very heated, and some people are very much for licensing and regulation. Some people are very much against it. They think that it infringes upon their rights. We have, you know, we have some states that are licensed and some states that are not licensed, and there's not a whole lot that we can really do about that. It's kind of up to the state and the regulators of that state as to how they want to run that. I think one of the biggest problems is if there is going to be some kind of licensing and regulation, the number one thing is that it has to be enforced properly, and it has to be enforced evenly across the board, and it has to be fair for everybody involved. Otherwise, there's no point. If there's no consequences for not following the regulations, then what's the point of it? Right. I hear that a lot in like Texas is a big place where I just hear it a lot. And we teach down in Texas quite a bit. And there's the Texas Locksmith Association. There's a lot of different moving parts there. And one of the biggest complaints that I hear is, OK, they put the regulation in place. I pay my money. The scammers don't pay their money and they're still operating free and clear. But I just have to now pay this extra tax, if you will, or this extra fee that they don't have to pay. And you know, it just, that's kind of one of the main portions of contention there. So what are your opinions on that?
Well, I hear the same thing out there from people in the industry. If you're in a locksmith licensing state, well, then of course you need to adhere by those standards that are put by the state. I believe that the states, they have pretty good jurisdiction of what's going to look at. You've got to look when states pass laws, they just, you know, people think that these states, they just go pass these laws and it's just like, we're going to do what we want to do. We're going to pass this law, but that's really not the case. These laws go in front of committees. They go in front of subcommittees. You know, they have economists look at this, see how it's going to affect the, you know, the thing. But, you know, a lot of the problem, the same stuff I hear from you, from people in Texas, from people in North Carolina, from people in these licensing states, is that if I have to play by the rules, everybody should have to play by the rules. And it seems like the enforcement of that is just so laxed. And the enforcement, you know, whoever's in charge of the enforcement, it seems like they almost, it's a tax. It becomes a tax on the people that play by the rules. You know, I mean, we've maybe seen, I think in Texas, there was one locksmith probably that's been busted for operating illegally. And, you know, I'm sure there's more. I don't know. I'm not in Texas. I don't see that every day. I know when I was down there for the TLA show, you know, I put in one of these calls just to kind of see what happens when people call some of these places and see the practices that are used. And then, of course, people show up in unmarked vans. They don't have their Texas locksmith license number on the van. I know that's part of the procedure there. And they're not following the rules. And, you know, that's the thing, is that does create, you know, unfair competition. If you've got somebody that's not playing by the laws in your state and they're getting allowed to do that, it becomes really frustrating. It does, because, you know, you're competing with those people that aren't necessarily playing by the rules. And it creates some tension, I feel like, in the industry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It does create a lot of tension. And, you know, like I said, there's a lot of people that, you know, they're the don't tread on me, you know, just I want to be left alone. I don't want to be regulated. I don't need it. And yet again, if you're going to be paying into these things, then there need to be some consequences and repercussions for not doing so, because otherwise the people who are abiding by the rules are the only ones that really get penalized through the fees and through the taxes and through everything else. So I really think that there's not there's not one great solution that's just going to make everybody happy. I mean, there's just not. Let's identify the problems and then let's identify some possible solutions to those problems. You know, Colorado is not a licensed state, and that's okay. I'm very glad and I'm very thankful for that. And some other states are. And, you know, sometimes you have to go through an apprenticeship and you have to do a ludicrous amount of work to actually get that license. And for somebody to just bypass all of that and just say, hey, I'm just going to start running calls and taking people's money and not go through those proper procedures and protocol. That is where the people that get so frustrated that can't hardly have a civil conversation like the one we're having. That's the reason they get so bent out of shape, because of that unfairness, because it's not applying to everybody equally. And that seems like where the real problem is. I think there would be a lot more people actually on board and maybe even for licensing if it was stated that, look, this is the way that we're going to do it. If you report somebody, they will be investigated. There will be legal action if they do not comply with all of the rules and regulations that are in place. And there will be some serious consequences that come from that if you're caught doing so. I think that would really bring people along, but it's just so hard to do. It's just so hard to manage. I mean, the legislators and the people, law enforcement, for crying out loud, doesn't even know what they're looking for. One of the biggest things that will come up when we start talking about locksmith scams and scammers is, what is the scammer? What is a locksmith scam? I mean, go ahead and give us your definition, if you will.
Well, you know, that's the thing is I've not had as much experience with the scammers in my area here. I will say, like, we're not a big metropolitan area. You're going to see that in bigger areas. But I feel like that term scammer has been thrown around, you know, very loosely. I don't believe everyone that gets labeled as a scammer may be a scammer, because I feel like you have a couple different categories of people, right? We have scammers that are using, you know, tactics that are not right, right? They're going and they say, oh, we're going to do this. And then they drill the lockout on the house when, of course, we know that's something that could be picked, right? Or maybe they don't have the skill set to perform that function. And then we have guys that just do things cheap. And then some guys call those guys scammers. And, it falls into this category of it seems like it's really hard to define what a scammer is. And it's frustrating, right? You know, the biggest thing is none of us want to be salespeople. And, you know, when I look at the scammers, I really look at what they're doing and I go, I see how they're selling, right? So is what their method is they use, and some people call it a bait and switch and some people call it that, but the reality of it is they use a method that's used all around the automotive industry, right? They don't sell, and if you ever call these people or talk to these people, they don't really sell you the job. Mm-hmm. And that's where the biggest mistake I see with locksmiths, because, you know, you've heard it, we've been at the shows, they pick up their phone, locksmith! And that's how they answer the phone, right? And some of that customer service has been lost. When you call these scammers, you know, there are big call centers and things like that, you get someone that answers the phone and you get what you're used to getting of a sales experience at a lot of places. Hey, how's it going? What's your name? Can I get your name? Okay. Hey, and if this call gets disconnected, can I get your number? So now we've got the customer's name, we got the number, we know who they are, but also we start to ask them a little bit of questions and they don't give them a price. And, you know, some people say that's bait and switch. Some's not. Now, if they lead with it's only going to be $59.95. And of course they come out and it turns into a $500 bill and they have to drill the lockout in your house. Of course, yes, that is a deceptive practice. But, you know, is what I try to tell people is instead of getting mad at the scammers, because you can't do, and I'm not saying you can't do anything, right? But instead of getting upset with the scammers and starting to call for regulation, because that's what we see. It's like people just welcome any regulation on the industry they can now because they think it's going to solve this problem with the scammers, right? take a look at their process, take a look at how they're selling, and learn from that process. And if I think if the this industry would become more like the repair side of the industry, you go look at body shops that do well, you go look at repair facilities do well, you go look at dealership sales departments that do well, and you'll learn one thing. They usually have something called a BDC department. And that department's sole goal is to sell the appointment, right? And if you can sell that appointment, then you're going to go take a look at that vehicle. You're going to see what that vehicle needs. You're going to assess it. And I say vehicle because, of course, I'm in the automotive industry, right? You're going to assess what that vehicle needs. And then at that point, you can go ahead and quote that customer on any type of thing they need. The only difference is in their technique and what should be done is they should be making that clear to the customer. Listen, this is a $59.95 charge that we charge for a service call, right? I'm going to have one of my certified locksmiths or, you know, they if they're Aloha certified, right? I think you all offer a certification through Aloha, don't you?
I mean, there's different avenues and different titles that you can have. That's what the last little bits after the name are, or just having your Aloha membership.
Yeah. And I feel like ASE may be coming out with something for locksmiths as far as a certification. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you could say, hey, I'm going to send my certified locksmith out there, the licensed locksmith or whatever the case may be for whatever your state and what your business model is. You know, we're going to send our locksmith out there. They're going to take a look at that vehicle and they're going to give you a written quote within, you know, with options. Right. And the problem of it is you're never going to win the price war. And I don't know if we can agree on that. There's always going to be a guy that's going to do it $10 cheaper, you know? And if I'm trying to win the price war, I want to be the last guy you called. I don't want to be the first guy you called.
Right.
So, that's the thing. I feel like a lot of people get labeled as scammers that maybe aren't scammers. You know, the guy who does $50 keys and he's got a legitimate business license, insurance, and all that stuff, he's not really a scammer. He's just cheap.
Right. And I think the lines get really, really blurred there as far as what will happen more often than not. And people don't want to admit this, and it will probably ruffle some feathers when I say it. But just because you don't agree with the other person's business practices doesn't automatically qualify them as a scammer. Just because you don't like the price that they charge, just because you don't like that the van that they drive, just because you don't like the way that they operate and run their business, doesn't automatically put them into a classification that actually qualifies them as a scam, which is actually really harming the industry. I really feel that we have to, if we can't agree on what a scammer is, we're never going to be able to fight it. We're never going to be able to do anything against it. We're never going to be able to accomplish anything if we can't even agree on what the definition and terminology is. So I would really bring it back to, you know, it false bait and switch, false advertising, because that is illegal. That is, you know, false advertising. You can't say you're going to get your car opened for $19.99 and then charge them $600 and not have some kind of bait and switch tactic there. The other thing that I noticed too is a lot of times the scammers don't even know that they're working for a scam outfit. I have been in classes and at conventions talking with people, and they think that they're working for a legitimate locksmith company. And then I start bringing up some of the scammer tactics that are being used. No marked vehicle, no marked uniform, no photo ID. Don't quote a price over the phone. It's going to be more expensive when they get there. And then all of a sudden, you can almost see the light bulb click. Oh my God, I'm working for one of these companies. And you have some really good-hearted, genuine people who want to do good that simply get caught up in the wrong atmosphere because that's all they're taught. Obviously, seasoned locksmiths like us would know when we're doing an interview process, we can spot them a mile away. But somebody who doesn't know anything and just answers an ad and is like, hey, we'll train you, you know, come with us, we'll train you. And we'll show you how to use a long reach tool, and we'll show you how to use drill a lock out, and we'll show you how to do this and put a new lock in. And that's your basic training. Go charge people, you know, $500, $600, $700. that's really where the main problems come into play. So I hope that we can really at least have a conversation about what the scam, what a scam really, really is, and how detrimental that actually is to the person. It's the person that's getting ripped off when they had no intention of having that happen in the first place. They thought somebody was going to come out and open their car or their home for between $19.99 and $59.99, and somebody came out, destroyed their property, and then charged them a significantly higher price on top of that. So would we be at least, do you agree with those definitions?
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what I would consider a scammer. I would consider a scammer that someone that's using deceptive business practices, they're not operating, you know, in an ethical manner, right?
Right.
You know, the bait and switch thing is very borderline, because I see that technique used as an effective technique, but it's not really a bait and switch. The biggest thing that separates a scammer and someone who sells appointments, because I sell appointments, right, is you have to be upfront and honest with the customer. Listen, this is what it costs for me to come out and evaluate the situation, right? Yep. I can't expect my customer who knows nothing about, I think it's funny because you'll see when we get on these phone calls, and once again, locksmiths don't want to be salespeople, and I don't blame them, right? You're a skilled technician who's skilled at their craft, and it's, you don't want to be a salesperson. And sometimes it's almost best if you get to a point in your business to remove yourself from that position, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have to have someone that's super knowledgeable, but they'll ask people the questions. It's like, well, has he got this kind of key or this kind of key? And the customer's like, I don't know. Right. Mm-hmm. So at that point, when you're doing that, you know, if you want to better adequately quote the job, you know, it'd say, hey, we're going to come out, we're going to unlock your vehicle, this is the charge for that. Then we're going to evaluate what's going on, and then I'm going to give you a written quote, right? And show you some of the options that you have to go ahead and get your vehicle going. Is that something that sounds good to you? You know,
right.
And that's the biggest thing to me that separates a locksmith from someone who would use that, you know, appointment setting type of thing, was a scammer locksmith will say, right, is you have to be upfront with that customer to know that, listen, you're not going to get this all keys lost job done for $59.95.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a lot of it too, is anybody that calls, there's no reason why I can't give a reasonable quote over the phone. I mean, just once you've done it long enough, how much is it to open my car? Okay. Well, what kind of car is it? And how far away is it? Those are the only two factors that determine the cost of that lockout. And we're not talking a little bit of difference, or I mean, we're not talking a gigantic difference. We're talking about a small amount of difference in these prices. Okay, is it going to cost more for me to come out and open up a BMW or a Mercedes or something that's a lot more high end, that's a little more difficult to open, and that's a different kind of client anyways? Or is it going to be for a Honda Civic, right? And how far away is it? Do I have to drive 5 minutes across town, or do I have to drive an hour and a half to come get you? Those are really the only things that are going to come up in that equation. And then as far as house lockouts go, I mean, it's going to be a Schlage or it's going to be a Kwikset 90% of the time, 95% of the time. Very few people have a Medico or an ASA or something like that on their door.
Yeah.
And so you should be able, as a professional, you should be able to give an accurate quote over the phone pretty reasonably, and your shop should be able to do that in most cases too. At least that's how I feel about it.
And you should be able to, but is what I will challenge you to do is find a very good shop in your area that does a lot of business, right? An automotive repair facility, or say a dealership service center, and you call them and go, how much is it to have a head gasket put on my, you know, 2015 Jeep Grand Cherokee, right?
Yeah.
And what do you think they do? Do you think they tell you how much that is? They have all the software there in front of them to tell them what that job would cost. Or do they say, hey, would you bring the vehicle to us? We're going to take a look at your vehicle, you know, at no charge. and we're going to evaluate that. I'm going to give you a full write-up that's going to be everything that you're going to need and give you a quote. Right. And the thing of it is you're never going to win that price war. You have to learn early on in sales, right? And whether you like it or not, if you're a locksmith, you're in sales. If you're interacting with that customer, you're in sales.
Mm-hmm.
You have to learn early on, what are you selling the customer on? Are we selling them on the price, Wayne? Because there's a guy that does it cheaper than you. You're, you know, someone who, you know, is well-versed in your trade, and you go to training, you teach training events, you have all the certifications, you have everything that you need. You stay on top of business. So if I call you for a job and you tell me that it's going to be $500, and I call the next guy and he says $250, well, who, as a consumer, who do you think I'm going to go with?
It just depends. I mean, it depends on what you're going after, I feel, because I think somebody, like if I'm being hired to open a safe,
yeah,
that's probably going to be something where they're more concerned about the end result versus opening a Toyota,
right?
You know, Corolla or something, right? There's, hey, I need it now. And that's the other thing too, is what is the urgency? You know, can somebody even get out there? If I can get out there in 5 minutes, they'll pay an extra $50-$100 for my service versus having to wait for a half hour or an hour for somebody else. And I think that plays a lot into it too.
The biggest problem I see with when people call and they call locksmiths, and it's funny because not only have I done that, I've had some of these guys that we've called their businesses, right? We'll call their businesses. We'll see what they say. And we'll look at that and look and how can you improve that process? And one of the biggest drops that I see is they never ask for their business. Mm. They go, well, how much is it to do this? Well, it's $250 to do a key on that vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't go, you know, hey, that job usually ranges in the, you know, $250. It may be depending a little bit more depending on what the vehicle is. But let me ask you this. Is this something you're looking to do right now? Is price the only thing that's stopping you from doing, you know, go ahead and set an appointment with us?
Right. No, I understand. I understand all of that. And it's, you know, there's a big gray area, and hopefully people listening can kind of hear both sides of it and see that, you know, I'm not shouting from the rooftops, hey, everybody needs to be licensed, or everybody doesn't need to be licensed. We need to get rid of it and, you know, regulate or deregulate everybody right now. What we're saying is these are a lot of the moving parts of the conversation that actually have to come up with it. You know, you mentioned earlier, hey, you know, when somebody answers the phone, locksmith, you know, I answer the phone that way. But do you know why? Because every time I say, hello, this is Wayne with Tri-County Locksmith Service. How can I help you today? What's the next thing they say?
Is this a locksmith?
Huh? Is this a locksmith? Right. Yeah. And so it's like, I'm not wasting my words to do that again. And I try and get the conversation over to text message as fast as possible. Hello. Yes. You've got a locksmith on the line. What service do you need? Is it an emergency? Great. I'm going to send you a text message. I need all your contact information. Thanks. Bye. Click. That does two things. It makes them give me the information, so they're doing the work and they're sending the accurate information. And B, that frees up my phone line for another phone call to come in so that I can talk to them and get another call lined up after that one.
And I totally get that. And, you know, they're going to drag. These guys are going to absolutely drag me in the comments. And I already know they're going to, because, you know, I am controversial on a lot of subjects. But the issue with it is you can't lose the salesmanship, right? You are in a service industry, and part of that is servicing. And it seems like a lot of the frustration comes from these guys is most of the people in the industry, either they're a one-man outfit or they're a small outfit, right? And they've just not grown to the scale to where they have someone to answer the phone, where they have someone to deal with that customer, where they actually have the time to dedicate into that customer. And, you know, when you're in the sales industry, it's kind of the difference in being, and I say this, and I don't mean to offend you. There's two types of salespeople. Either you're a salesperson or you're a serial killer, right? And the difference of it is a salesperson take someone who's maybe is on the edge of wanting to buy something or needing a service or whatever, and they've not made up their decision, and they convince that person of why they need to do business with them. Or you have a serial killer, and a serial killer plays the numbers game, and they just sit around and they wait on victims, unsuspecting people that will just say yes because they need it done, or they're in a position where they have no other choices.
Right.
And then that's why, you know, who was it? I think it's Warren Buffett, you know, when he says, when the tides go out, you'll find out who's skinny dipping, right?
Right.
So the thing of it is the problem is we get really busy, right? We get really busy and we lose the salesmanship, because when we get really busy and we get, you know, overflowed with work, we lose the salesmanship because, well, of course, we don't have time to spend with each one of those customers, right? We start to skip steps in the sales process. We don't build rapport with the customer. We don't build value in our product. We don't build value in who we are as a business. But then when the tides start to roll out and business slows down, because, I mean, if you're in this business, I'm sure you have it. You got weeks where you can't answer another phone call. And then you'll have weeks where maybe the phone calls don't roll in as much. It's very, you know, wishy-washy sometimes of how it goes. The economy affects it. You know, different things affect that. But the issue is you have to train yourself to get out of that mindset that it's okay to skip steps, that it's okay to not build value in your product, that it's okay not to build value with the customer, not to build rapport with that customer. Because at the end of the day, there's so many options out there to who they can have keys made by. There's so many options of who can service their business. But they're going to do business with you, not always because of price.
Right.
Price is the easiest thing in the world. And that's why I always tell people, if price is the only reason, you know, you're not doing business with me today, then, you know, that's not a worry to me, because price, we can justify the price.
Yeah.
I want to make sure if you're doing business with me, it's because you trust me and you know that I'm going to do a good job. That's what I care about. I care about the customer service aspect of it. And we can't lose that. Even though we're skilled professionals, even though we don't want to do it, we have to force ourselves down there. If not, we become this behavior of where we start to welcome regulation, right? And one of the hardest parts that you ever have to do as a business in order to get better at what you're doing is you have to be able to say, what I'm doing right now isn't working. What can I do to make myself better?
Yeah.
If you can take all the blame that you blame everybody else in the industry for your downfalls, and you can channel that blame toward yourself, you're going to grow as a businessman. You're going to grow as a person, and you're going to start to realize that the only person's fault, if your business is failing, is your fault.
Your own. Yep. Yeah. And that's what everybody wants to point the finger. Well, the licensing, we can't make it because the licensing is too expensive. We can't make it because the scammers are taking all of our business. We can't make it because XYZ, whatever it is. All of those things you can't change. You can't change any of them. The only thing that you can change is yourself and how you choose to adapt to the situation and react to the situation. You can only react and adapt. And every single engagement is a learning opportunity to learn something new, get new pieces of information to make a better choice in the future. And the sooner people start really looking at it like that, rather than it's everybody else's fault and pointing the finger all around, the sooner you will become more successful, the sooner the industry will become more successful, and the sooner everybody will be a whole lot happier, because you can only change you. We've been on for about a little over 30 minutes, and I do want to touch on just briefly, but one of our other controversial subjects is NASTIF. So what are your opinions on that? And let's just try and be, I know people are going to get in an uproar.
And they will.
It is what it is. We just need to try and get some educated information out so that we can have an educated discussion.
Yeah. So kind of leading in from what you said there is, you know, we have to learn as an industry, right, is that I love Alloa, right? But Alloa is not going to save us. You know, the TLA is not going to save us. The what is it? Houston Locksmith Association, North Carolina Locksmith Association, Alabama Locksmith Association. What do we got to think? Yankee and them up north? I don't know. There's so many associations, right? I love all those associations, but they're not going to save us. I love NASDAQ, and I know some people may hear that and be like, what are you talking about? You criticize them all the time, right? But I love all those associations, but is what people have to realize is these associations can't save us from ourselves, right?
They're there to help. They're there to aid, and they are there to offer support. But you have to do the lion's share of the work. If you think that they're going to save you and you're waiting for the white knight to ride in on the horse and scoop you up and save you, it ain't happening.
No. And that's the thing, and that's what I see, and that's my biggest problem. And when we started looking at the ScanTool validation program, and we started looking at all this stuff, and people are like, why does JK oppose this so much? One of the biggest reasons of it is it seems like everybody's argument always goes to some anti-competitive type thing, right? You know, you'll get into, you know, we'll debate this stuff, and I love to debate, and I don't care to debate this with y'all day long. We'll debate in the comment section, whatever the case may be. But you can't welcome regulation because you think it's going to take out your competition. It's going to get rid of the guy who does cheap keys because, like, you know, some of these scammers are licensed. Some of these scammers do have these certifications, right? We've seen that before. So if you think that regulation is going to save you, it's not, because here's the problem. The scammers are way more organized than you and me.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yep.
They're way more organized at it. They've got
a Google. They're way better at exactly optimizing. They're way better. They're better at everything except for being a locksmith.
Yeah. So, and my biggest issue is with NASDAQ. Like I said, I love NASDAQ. I was a supporter of NASDAQ for years. I still support certain aspects of the program, right? You know, I used to be there. We all used to be cool. You know, I spoke for them at the general meeting and things like that. I used to be one of the first air providers, right? I think it was like Aztec Repairify, Opus, you know, Keith over there at L1. He's one of the board members. And I think there was one other, and then it was me. Like, I was like the fourth or the fifth one to be added, right? Mm-hmm. Back before air became, you know, a lot of people got onboarded. You know, I grabbed a bunch of people, and I kind of was like, Donnie, we got to get these people on as air providers. We need more people on this program. So when you look at that, and, you know, you say, like, what? It's I try to tell people, and I want people to understand, it's not that I don't like NASDAQ or I dislike NASDAQ. It's just that I am going to hold them accountable just as I would hold one of my family members accountable, right? I look at an association like Alloa, and then I look at NASDAQ. And then I start to see some of the things that Alloa does and NASDAQ doesn't do. And it really concerns me, right? You know, I know Alloa, correct me if I'm wrong, if an Alloa member or whatever can request, like financial documents and financial statements, and we can see where the money goes, right?
Yeah, I believe so, because it's nonprofit.
Yeah, and they're the same. They're a 501c6. Mm-hmm. And then I look at things like there's a conflict of interest policy that, you know, that the board members have signed. And there seems to be more protections in the organization. And I like the way Alloa is set up better than NASDAQ, because we don't see where the money goes. We don't know where the money goes. And I'm not trying to lead anybody to believe that, you know, they're doing something illicit with the money, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, when I'm submitting my customers' information to you,
what are they doing with it?
Yeah. And you know, and I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong with it, but if I look and I see that SDRM management is a sublet expense on their an outsourced expense on their taxes, and I see that SDRM support is an outsourced expense on their taxes, I think it's pretty safe to assume that that's a separate entity. That's a separate company, right?
Yeah. Yeah. At transparency, people in this day and age really value transparency. And I think as an association, I really am proud of being a member and being the Southwest board director of Aloha because of the transparency that they do have. You know, in most cases, they try and really show, hey, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing for you. And if they're not doing something, then they're open about that too. Hey, that's just something we can't just throw money at the scammer problem. No matter how much money the whole association could use, every penny that they've ever made from the beginning of time, and it wouldn't be enough to do it. It just wouldn't be enough to do it. You have to take that personal accountability in. And I really strongly urge people, especially if you're watching this and you're getting some really strong feelings about it, you have to look at what you're doing and what you can change first. And you've got to realize that these organizations are set up to try and help, but they have a million screaming voices all in pulling them in different directions, and everybody wants something different. I admin the Locksmith Nation group on Facebook. So if you're looking to join a group for a Facebook group for locksmiths, that's a great one to do. There's a bunch of other ones out there, but locksmiths are very independent, very opinionated and strongly opinionated. And it is like herding cats. It really is to try and get locksmiths to organize and to agree on something is practically impossible. And then we wonder why the associations and why everybody, you know, has such strong feelings when something is either being done or nothing's being done. You know, nobody wants to be told what to do, but by the same token, they want an association to stand up and do something. You can't have those opposing thought patterns and have a successful outcome. There's going to be some give and there's going to be some take. And that's really what it boils down to, in my opinion. What are your final thoughts on that?
I mean, my biggest thing is you've got to have your voice heard, right? And that's something that, you know, I face some troubles with. And, you know, I guess you could perceive as retaliation possibly or something like that. You know, I've received some major pushback from that area because I let my voice be heard. But we have to be open to criticism. We have to be open to, commentary and things like that. That's one of the biggest things. Now, I'll agree with you. If you put 20 locksmiths in a room, I don't think they're going to agree on anything. They're not going to agree on the temperature of the room. If you ask them, one's going to tell you it's 62, one's going to tell you it's 97, right? Everybody does not agree, especially when it comes to locksmiths. And it's hard. It's hard for these associations. It's hard for these board members. I think one of the things is kind of like what we saw, though, is that input has to be delivered. And, you know, when some things happened, like, you know, recently, you know, there was the discoverance of, you know, Greg Potter had said something along the lines. He was asked if there was a vote on the Scantle validation program and, you know, or was that just one person that was like, hey, we're going to do this, and everybody followed suit, right? And there wasn't a vote from what he was saying. I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't want to attest to that there was or wasn't a vote, right? But that being said, when, you know, I heard that a board member was surprised by this regulation that was being rolled out, it really became concerning to me, right? Yeah. And one of the things that I think we have to do as an industry, as professionals, right, is we can see wrongdoing, but we can't become vigilantes in trying to fix the wrongdoing. We have to make sure that we don't compromise our ethics and we don't compromise our principles and potentially break laws in doing, trying to stop criminals. Because at the point we do that, then will we become no better than the criminals, right?
Right. That's like a big thing for law enforcement is you don't uphold the law by breaking it.
Yeah. And that's another thing, you know, we hear things like this is a joint effort for law enforcement, but we don't really see law enforcement involved in it.
They don't know. They wouldn't know what to look for. Yeah. We would have to educate them.
Yeah. And another problem that you run into with law enforcement is law enforcement can't make laws.
They just enforce the ones that are
there. Exactly. And when they tried to do that, well, of course, that's when we had things like the Chevron ruling where they're like, listen, you can't make up your own rules and then go and enforce them. It just doesn't work like that. You have to have legislation behind it.
Right.
And, you know, that's one of the really the big things. So when people see me out here and they see me being objective to NASA, if they see me calling these things out, you know, I want these people to understand I'm not doing this because I want to hurt NASA or I want bad things to come to the association. Because, you know, if we was to lose NASA, then that would be detrimental to the industry. We would have to have something to replace them. It's what all I ask for and all I look for is that we make sure if we're going to impose regulatory actions on the industry, that we have those approved by the FTC. We have those approved by the DOJ. We go through the same processes that any other industry would go through in order to do that, right? Mm-hmm. We have this stuff looked at because it's what you do is you have the potential to put the trade association at risk. And there's two things that you've got to kind of do, and I think you would agree with me, you know, being with Aloha, and I would hope you would, is you have to please your membership, right? Because that's who you represent.
Right.
But you also have to mitigate risk for the association.
Right.
Right. You can't go out here and put something on into, you know, that could be considered anti-competitive or right. put some crazy regulatory things on the market that could potentially set up the association for a lawsuit or something along those terms. So, you know, that's the thing. And I think if we're going to do this and we're going to do it, we have to do it right. And we need fair due process. You know, when we look at things like the appeal process for NASDAQ, you have to waive your legal rights. Even in my case, when I had to file an appeal, I had to waive my legal rights if I wanted that appeal to be heard. And I put in there explicitly I didn't waive my legal rights. And then my appeal was denied for that reason.
Right.
I feel like if we're professionals, we're a due process, just as if we were in any other profession. The only thing that separates it is we have a trade association that acts as a regulatory body, but they are not a quasi-government entity. So therefore, they don't have to afford us the rights of due process.
Right.
So, you know, that's kind of my gripes with it. And, you know, I think we just need fairness. You know, we have to make sure what we're doing is legal. We have to make sure what we're doing is fair, and we have to make sure it's the best thing for the industry. And I think a big thing that no one looks at, Wayne, is how this can affect the aftermarket industry. I mean, I think it's safe to say, you know, Altel, AutoProPad, and the original innovators of most of this stuff, like SmartPro or what Advanced Diagnostics, right? These guys were there for us when the OEMs weren't.
Right.
When we couldn't get access to things like this, they just done like me, you know, they created processes that the dealership tools won't do.
Right.
You know, you can't go take the Chrysler software and go pull a PIN code. You know, you can't take any of the Chrysler software and go clone one of these modules like I do with my software. So right. if we neuter the aftermarket and we cut down their customer base, it would be essentially, and we look at it because free market, we operate in a free market, right? How would you feel if Papa Lock made a deal with the state of Colorado, which I know you don't do automotive, but Colorado came in and said, you know what, instead of regulation, instead of doing this, we're just going to have nobody but Papa Lock do these jobs in the state of Colorado because we know they operate in that. Well, every locksmith in the state of Colorado and probably across the nation would lose their minds because, yeah, you know, because it's free market. Right. That's what you have to understand. And that's what I try to get people to understand. Free market is not a one-way street. Free market is not only there when it benefits you.
Right.
Free market is for every industry.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. We're coming up on about an hour, so I want to thank you for coming on and having a meaningful and intelligent rational conversation about this. This is the only way that progress is going to be made. If we sit here and point fingers and yell and scream, if everybody in the room is yelling, nobody hears anything. So this is the platform. This is the way to get the ball rolling. This is the way for people to get their voices and opinions heard. And so I want to thank you for doing that and coming on today and having a insightful conversation. Whether or not people agree with what either one of us have said doesn't matter. I'm not here to get people to agree with me. I'm here to allow the platform for the conversation to be had. What are your final words that you want to depart with today?
You know, going along with what you said there, Wayne, is, you know, my only ask for this is that we can have respectful debates, right? That we can talk to each other as the professionals we are. Not the name calling, not the, you know, one of the biggest things is it seems like it's like, oh, well, you know, this Phelan thing. And I think it's really what got me started on this was, you know, it's the Phelans and the backyarders and the scammers and the hacks and the people that don't like that. We have to remove that aspect from conversation. We have to be able to sit down and have really hard conversations without being emotional, right? And without taking things personally. Right. To me, this is not a personal matter. This is my business.
Yep.
So I approach this as a business. I don't take it personal at all. You know, none of this stuff bothers me. At the end of the day, I'm going to turn this off. I'm going to go inside my house and I'm going to sit there with my family, right? That's the stuff that really matters. Everything else is kind of water under the bridge.
Right.
Yeah. Really, is what we have to do is we have to maintain professionalism, and we have to be able to have these hard conversations. And I totally appreciate you letting me come on the podcast and hearing my views and things like that. Hopefully, someone out there is listening that they will, you know, take in what I've said. And I don't want you to take, you know, as I'm trying to change your mind or anything else. Is what I want these people to do is understand that. It's okay to be objective. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay to fact check. And you can agree with something. You can support somebody, but that does not mean you have to have a blind allegiance.
Right.
We should always be doing our due diligence to make sure as an industry, we're going down the right path.
That's right. That's right. All I can ask is that people remain civilized and ethical with the decisions that they make, and everyone is entitled to their opinions, and that's what makes this country great. That's what makes the industry great. And that's how we get new ideas. And that's how the thought leaders really, really come through. So again, thank you for coming on today. I really appreciate it. You've stated your opinions in a very civilized manner. And this is the kind of stuff that really starts leading to change and really opens up the dialogue for people to have an intelligent conversation on difficult subjects. So thank you so much. I really, really appreciate it. And do you have any websites or any social media stuff you want to plug before we go?
So definitely check me out on Facebook. You know, I'm JK Walker. I'm really easy to find. Also, if you want to take a look at my software, you can go to ecuherald.com. And don't forget to vote for Wayne Whitten for president.
All righty. Thank you so much. Yes, I am running for president for LOA this year. And maybe we can take some of these things to heart. And hopefully people can see that I'm willing to have a civilized conversation about difficult topics so that we can really take this industry in the direction that it needs to go for the best for everybody involved. So thank you so much. Check out JK Walker. Check out his products. Check out his social media pages. And everyone have a great day. Thank you so much. This is the Locksmith Security Network. This is the next level and the next game changer in the industry. So thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
You too, Wayne.
Thanks. Welcome to the Locksmith Security Network. LSN is your powerful resource hosted by Wayne Whitten for all things locksmith and security.